Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Don't we all love our human condition? We now come to the final week of our revealing, perhaps even confronting conversations about givers and takers with our Open House human condition guru, clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley. Tonight, if you're a giver, how do you not end up a doormat when there are takers around? Lynn, welcome back.
Hi, Lee.
Great to see you. As I said, it's been very revealing, this series of conversations. Give us a quick recap of where we've been. Set the context first.
Okay. Like in the first week, we could see that we looked at the givers, takers, and the matches.
Yes.
And we could see that people who were givers succeeded in the long term, that they had a style that was to benefit others, and that's how they measured the worth of their effort. So they thought, is it worth the effort that I'm putting in? And they measure it if it's good for another person.
Yes.
So that's the givers. The matches think that it's worth their effort if there's an equal benefit for them to come back in return. And the takers see that they can get a bargain. They look out for, you know, how they can put in less effort for more gain for themselves. And that's not meaning that they're bad people. That's just how they think. And they actively put their effort into finding connections that would benefit them.
We all know them.
Yeah. Well, I think all of us have a little bit of each of
probably
them.
Probably true too.
Yeah. But last week we looked at the style of the giver versus the taker. And where the givers manage to get more people on side with them as they go through life. And for those who may do, say, like a public speaking exercise, the givers had a style that attracted all three styles to them. While the takers, when they did a public speaking exercise, they tended to get people offside because they were a lot more dominant.
Okay, yeah.
This week we're going to look at burnout for the givers and exploitation and how to be a contagious giver.
Okay, let's look at burnout first. I'm sure the givers would burn out more than takers.
Yes, that's true. And the research actually said that the givers burn out and they fail, but they also have givers that succeed. So
okay.
there is two sets of givers.
It's never neat.
That's right. And so there's a Canadian psychologist, or two psychologists, Reimer and Walker, and they looked at the motivation of highly successful givers. So those ones who didn't necessarily burn out and lose the plot, it was the successful ones. They found some really interesting findings, and they found that there were two types of givers. There were the people who were selfless and self-sacrificing
right.
givers, and they were motivated only for other people. And then there were the more successful givers they regard them as otherish. So they looked out for others as well as they looked out for themselves. So a bit like being selfish and looking for others. So
yes,
it was a
okay.
bit of both. And these people were motivated equally by others' interests as well as their own interests. They still regarded as givers, though. And the otherish givers didn't see that their own need competed with the needs of others. So they didn't think, oh, well, I do it for me. Well, I'll do it for them. They basically saw that though their own needs was in tune with the other person's needs.
I'd like to know why some givers appear to burn out while others just roar on and are still on fire.
Yeah. Well, the givers that are on fire were the ones who were the otherish ones, the ones who actually had two sets of motivations,
okay.
the motivation to serve other people and do things for other people, but also the motivation to be self-serving as well. But the serving of themselves was in line with looking after another person.
Okay,
so
yes.
let me take this another
yes.
step. So when you see the people who burn out, the givers that burnt out were the ones who were just giving and giving and giving, and all the time their own needs weren't being met.
Okay.
And so they were ending up feeling more depleted, and they didn't really see any of their own self-worth in that process.
Okay.
But those people who were looking both at serving other people and doing things for other people, at the same time, their sense of purpose and their meaning and the things that drove them was in doing things for other people.
In the act itself, yes.
So you think about, say, for example, a mother in the care of their child, okay? So the care of their child, they're doing a whole lot of things for their child. They could say, I'm doing everything for you and I'm, you know, you're never grateful and you should notice and blah, blah, blah. And they could play the martyr.
Yes.
Okay. Or they could just give, give, give and not do anything for themselves and never get their hair cut, never get new clothes, never do anything for themselves. And that would be the selfless giver who eventually burns out and doesn't do well.
No.
But you think about the mother who goes, I'm giving for you because I actually choose to give to you because I want you to be a better person. So my giving gives me a real sense of worth because I see you grow, and that is actually for my own purpose and my own meaning.
On my kind of ground.
Yes. So my time and doing something for me is actually doing something for you.
Can you give us an example of how this might play out in the workplace? That's a good example in families. How's it going to play out?
Okay, in the workplace. If we have a job that has a real sense of meaning and purpose in what we're doing.
Yeah.
And if we know that we are there because we're there to, you know, where our skills are used, we're able to actually look around and see that other people value our skill, and we have people on board that we're working with who are also with us. So it's a bit like the resilience work.
Yep.
With resilience, people who are resilient tend to have a number of supports around them who value them.
It's difficult to do it alone.
That's right. So if you are an otherish or a giver who is someone who's going to be successful, you give with that group behind you.
Yes. Yeah.
So essentially you have a sense of purpose in what you're doing. You then get a bit of a cheer squad in the process of that. You also get feedback in yourself because you see that the value of what you're doing is there.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing that Rima and Walker found, is that those people who didn't burn out, who were givers, were also the people who saw the benefits of their giving. And this was really pivotal in their research because they found that those people who could see the end point of what they were doing didn't burn out. They could put in more hours than anyone else, but if they actually saw the benefits,
yes,
of what they were doing, then that would not be, you know, they actually did better.
Yeah.
But for those people who gave and gave and gave but didn't know why or what happened to the money that they raised or didn't know what happened to the telephone calls that they managed and or, you know, the receptionist on the front desk who never got to see what happened behind the doors, they would burn out very quickly. But if they got to see the benefits of what they were doing and it linked in with their own sense of purpose, they then had this sense of, I'm actually giving, but at the same time, I'm doing this for me.
So here's this question about the doormat. How do you avoid becoming a doormat? If you're a giver and you're surrounded by takers, how do you avoid being exploited?
And this is a really, I wrestled with this thought as well as I was reading the research. And I was looking at that as, and I thought, how can you possibly keep giving when someone is just continually taking from you?
Yep.
It's just, it's like an open system. It doesn't actually help anyone. So I thought, actually, if you were really a discerning giver, if you were a giver who actually looked for the benefit of the other person, then the benefit of the other person wouldn't be to let them take from you.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
I get that.
So the benefit of the other person would be to allow them to change in some way or to allow them to have a bit of insight into their own behavior.
Yeah.
So to be a giver, it doesn't necessarily mean blatantly believing in everybody and trusting everyone that comes your way.
Naively.
No. But that's a really nice thing to be able to do.
Yes.
But it is also to be a little bit discerning and to be able to practice detachment. And I often talk to people about practicing detachment in a good way. And detachment is like to stand back, look at the situation, wonder what it's like for the other person, and consider what is a good way forward for both people.
Yep.
And sometimes that means not giving to them so readily. And sometimes that might mean that you're holding back. Another one to think through is to actually give with your head and not with your heart. So if you're a giver, then you tend to have a very good empathy button, which is right in the middle of your forehead and everyone pushes it. But if you don't have that so readily available, then it's better to actually start thinking through, what does that person need in order to better them? What sort of things would they need in order to be better in the society? And if they're a taker, you wouldn't just buy into their taking and let them take from you. You'd let them have a bit more of an insight.
Yep.
You'd also bring in some accountability for their growth. So if you're in business with someone who's a taker, give them the leeway that they need to do the job that they've got, but hold them accountable for the work that they do.
Yes.
And by doing that, you help them to actually start seeing what they've said they're going to do, they didn't actually do. And so that means you actually move into a little bit of a matching style. But when you move to a matching style, you've got to be very careful that you're not losing your own giving style there. You keep giving, but you think about the benefit of the other party so that they themselves can move to a better place.
Is there more balance in that approach?
There is balance. There's always balance in matching style. Yes, matching is a balance.
Yep.
But matching is that you match because you want to get the gain for yourself.
Yes.
But if you move to a matching style and you're a real giver, what you'll do is you'll move to a style which then means that person, the taker who's with you, will then be brought to account and they'll get to see that they haven't done their part yet. And so you're waiting for it.
Yep.
It's good to not be bitter and angry in that process, but to allow them to get to that place.
And I won't be on the doormat.
No. Allow them to see their own behaviour. So you act like a mirror. And I'm really, I think I like the story of Jesus. When Jesus goes to see Simon's house. And remember, he goes to Simon's house and he's invited to this very famous person's place.
Yep.
And Simon has no intention of being nice to Jesus. He doesn't even, wash his feet, which is similar to shaking his hand, He doesn't do any of the normal greetings. And it's on show because people are watching and they're all whispering, And so Simon did that for his own gain. He was a taker. He was there as a taker. He was wealthy. He was inviting Jesus because Jesus was a bit, like in the tabloids, he'd sort of get lots of attention.
Yes.
So Jesus comes into Simon's house. Now, he doesn't get angry with him, but he calls him to account.
Yes.
And
yes.
He tells Simon a story that is public. And I think that's another aspect as well, is that if you're with a taker, one of the things that you can do is actually make it public, but not in a bullying or nasty way, but rather this is an accountable process.
Which is fair enough.
And Jesus didn't bully Simon.
No.
He just brought Simon's behavior into the public limelight so that other people could make their own decisions.
Yeah.
And I think this is where, in that situation, Jesus was negotiating with Simon in a way that actually considered Simon's best interest.
Yes.
He was giving Simon an opportunity to see how he was himself.
Which was good for him.
That's
right.
Well,
you would have thought so, yes.
The other thing the researchers found is that those givers who were successful and they were put in front of takers, they did they gathered a group. Now, they used the term, instead of saying fight or flight when you're in trouble,
yep.
They used the term tend and befriend.
Tend and befriend.
Tend and befriend. Okay. So they said that the givers actually, because they were popular with people, they tend to people, and they befriend people. And so what would happen is that when they're with a taker, they have lots of other people around them who are also givers. So the taker becomes a little bit threatened by the fact that other people around them are different to them and have a different orientation. So I think, too, if you are in a situation where you're feeling like you're going to be used as a doormat and you're going to be taken for a ride by a taker, bring people who are also givers around you to keep you accountable of your own style and to keep you back into that zone. And then the taker has to either accommodate to what you're doing or they move away from you.
Is it possible, just finally, to change a culture?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And there's, I really love that on Hope 103 with this whole, pay it forward with the card when you go through McDonald's.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful thing. That's a culture. That's a way of shifting a culture. It's there is lots of things you can do in an organisation. You could have reciprocity groups where you actually invite someone along, or 15 or 20 people along, and each person comes in with something that they need, and other people work out how they can help that person.
Mm.
There are many times you can do that, and there are many exercises that we can do to build positive cultures in an organisation.
We might talk about that at a future time, actually.
That would be
lovely.
There'd
be a lot in that. Lynn Worsley, as always, thank you so much. Have
pleasure.
A great week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.